Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Glory, your Spurs and culture podcast. Tonight we're without Ash, who's celebrating his birthday and living his best life for the rest of us. And in a beautiful bit of podcast symmetry, we're also missing Charlie because his son was born today. Massive, massive congratulations and love to him and his wife, Emily. We'll let him do the name reveal on his return. In their absence, I'm joined by Billy, who is at the Amex on Saturday for an emotional win over Brighton, and Tom, who put the rest of us to shame by running a half marathon at the weekend. Tom, how are you feeling? Have you recovered?
Genuinely, I can barely move my legs. They're absolutely fucked. And I'm just going to move as little as possible for the rest of the week. Oh, and massive congrats to Charlie, obviously. Amazing news.
Yeah, it just feels like it's been, you know, a week of achievements for everybody, really. I'm just so impressed, Tom, to be honest, especially when you'd like sneakily posted your time, which I thought was like wildly impressive and like quite fast.
Thank you.
So yeah. Well done.
Just to say, annoyingly, I did see a couple of Arsenal shirts when I was running. It was the Royal Park.
Oh, my God, they're everywhere. Why are they everywhere?
They are, but I found that there was a spectator in an Arsenal shirt, and even though I was absolutely knackered, I still found the energy to muster.
You're like speeding past it.
As I ran past, I went, come on, you Spurs. Loved it.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Back to the football. It was a really, really, really tough week for Antonio Conte and all of the Tottenham players because their beloved fitness coach, Giampiero Ventrone, died last week. So I think it had obviously been a really rough time, and it seemed like it was incredibly emotional at the stadium in Brighton. And Bill, you were there. Can you just tell us how it was? Talk us through it.
Yeah, man, it was a bit of a weird one, like, because obviously the whole, you know, the surrounding days before had been very emotional. It was a total shock for everybody, and you just kind of have total, it puts everything into perspective about football. You know, we've all been spending the last couple of weeks moaning about the style of play and this and that, and then something like this happens and you realize nothing really matters that we're spending so much time being crossed over and worrying about. But I just wanted to say, like, the sort of rallying support from the fans I thought was fantastic, and I hope that it meant a lot to, you know, to his family and to Conte and the people that are, you know, feeling the loss the most, because the fans really, really got behind them. I just want to shout out again the work of THFC Flags and Spurs Song Sheet, because they had arranged for some Italian flags to be readily available for Spurs fans on the Friday before the game. They could go and pick them up. There were literally loads of Italian flags in there. The noise from the fans was one of the best away games I've been in for a very long time, which was contrast into one of the worst home atmospheres. I was really surprised by how bad the home atmosphere was, but that's beside the point. But I just thought the whole fans, everything was, you know, they did everything they could. And Yeah, it was. And even if, you know, forgetting the performance, forgetting the if we won or if we lost, it didn't really matter because we were behind and paying tribute to what is seemingly an incredible man who has left a lot to a lot of people. So, yeah, I think it was a really, really touching display of affection from the fans. And I hope it meant a lot to the people that lost him.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't really realise how big of a presence he was. And I think we hadn't, when the players' tributes started pouring in on social media, like they were so heartfelt. I don't think we saw anything quite that raw. And obviously Conte in tears before the game and then Kane being interviewed afterwards and he nearly broke down as well. And there was this lovely piece, I think it was in the Evening Standard this week, where Conte just basically spoke about how he's so proud to have the kind of people around him that he does. And he's proud of his players as human beings, like first and foremost, because they didn't, you know, he said they didn't do training all the next day. And he said, we don't, you know, they normally like focus so hard on the next game. And he just said, we didn't do any of that. They just went and they just played and they kind of did it almost by themselves, I think.
Yeah, and it did. The whole thing made me very, very proud of our club and what it means to be a Tottenham fan. And I think every single person involved in the club, from the players to the coach to the fans, you know, we did ourselves proud with and hopefully a fitting tribute to what was clearly a great man. I think there's a couple of things which gave away, like just how incredible that he obviously was and how much he meant to the players. Firstly, there's that video of Son after the Leicester game. When he's hugging the, you know, we know Son is no stranger to hugging people, but he hugs Giampiero for a good, like, solid minute after that hat-trick. So obviously the connection is there. And then we've all been watching Kane interviews for like 10 years or whatever now. I've never seen him like that before. He doesn't really give a lot away in interviews. He's very sort of, you know, he's very sort of well-trained. He doesn't tend to show much emotion, but I've never seen Kane like that. And for someone like Kane, who is, you know, a very, very well composed figure, always speaks very, very well in the media, to show that level of emotion, that really got to me, to be honest. So I think there was a clear sort of, you could really see that this wasn't just a coach. This was something much more to us. And I think his loss will be felt deeply by the players, fans and Conte alike. But yeah, it's just, it was for that, for, you know, really did feel proud to be a Spurs fan this weekend.
Yeah, watching it from home and seeing the look on the players' faces before the match was pretty heartbreaking, really. And like you said, Billy, the Conte kind of crying before the match as well just put everything in perspective. It reminded you that these people are human, and we can all sit here and kind of pontificate on how they played or their tactics or whatever, but they are real people. And yeah, it really showed that. Like you said, even without the win, that didn't really matter. It was I was really proud of the club as well.
And I know it was well documented on social media, but it was, you know, Hugo bought in a shirt with his name on the back to rapturous applause, obviously, and singing "There's Only One Giampiero," which was then, I believe, signed by all the players. And I think it's going to be donated to the family. I think Levy, Conte and Paratici have all gone to the funeral on yesterday, as we're recording this. So yeah, and I think for me, what sums it up was this quote from Matt Doherty. He was talking about being at training, and he said, he was behind us, and he's talking to his children here. We pick him up from training at the end of training. He says, he was behind us. I said, "Daddy, is that your friend?" And normally you would say, "That's one of the coaches." But I said, "No, that is one of my friends." And that's what he was to us. He was more than a coach. He was a friend. So RIP Giampiero.
Yeah, and I think that sort of takes us in really nicely to actually talking about the game, because with that in mind and remembering that we're actually talking about human beings who have very, very, very real feelings, it was actually just a game that came out of nowhere, right? Because the week, you know, last week and all the weeks leading up to it, we've been talking about player rotation and formation changes, and I certainly have said, I just don't think he's going to make any changes. He loves that formation. And at best, we'll see, you know, Perisic on the right. Conte caught us all sleeping and completely switched it up and went for the 3-5-2. How do we all feel about that? Tom?
I think it worked well, really. We got a win, obviously. I think with Kulusevski out and two games a week, we can't run all three of them into the ground. So I think he was right to rest one of the front three. Well, I thought Bissouma had a fairly good game. I don't think it was kind of spectacularly good. But what I did enjoy was that having three central midfielders on the pitch allowed Bentancur to get forward a bit. I think the goal came from that brilliant shot from outside the box that he had that the Brighton keeper saved. We then got the corner and Kane scored from that. So I think, yeah, I'm falling fairly deeply in love with Bentancur. Obviously, Højbjerg doesn't get dropped either, and I thought he had a really good game as well. So yeah, generally the formation worked well. I think Bissouma and Doherty kind of both had okay matches. They had good spells. Neither kind of blew you away, but we got the win. We've got to rotate with so many games on at the moment. I'm praying Kulusevski's back at the very least for Everton at the weekend. But yeah, I think in the circumstances, 5-3-2 was probably the right way to go, or 3-5-2, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I guess it was always going to be a bit tricky for Bissouma because there's a lot of expectation when you go back to your former club, right? I mean, I feel like loads of the time it works out really well against us, but not necessarily for us. So the sort of vibe I was getting from people, because I missed the first half of the game because I was on like an odyssey of my own with my two children trying to get back from Westminster, which was not that easy on Saturday afternoon. So, but what I was hearing from people was that even though he wasn't necessarily that good, like, and Bentancur and Højbjerg absolutely shone. And I'm almost feeling like, is it time for those two to have their own kind of portmanteau name now? Like, I fondly remember the days of Wambele, and I'm like, is it time? But those two names just don't really feel like they go that well together. So maybe something we can workshop a little bit later.
I mean, it's amazing how undroppable they both are in centre mid, really. You like to have two central midfielders who are like Conte, just they're the first two on the team sheet, essentially, with Romero, Kane and Son. Yeah, they're both so good. And like you said, I think like Bissouma kind of allowed them to shine a bit. I think it's also so important for Bissouma to get some minutes under his belt, clearly, get a start at a ground that he's familiar with, playing a lot of his former teammates. It's also just, I just wanted to say as well, Brighton were really good, like genuinely very good. We were lucky, really, with the win. Another day that so easily could have been a draw. They had some really great chances. And even though they lost, like, two of their star players in the summer, I was really impressed with Brighton. So it's a massive win to come away with, I think.
Yeah, and I just want to say on Bissouma as well, that I don't think it was an accident that Conte started him against Brighton, because if you remember that there was the Nottingham Forest game where Spence came, and Bissouma's playing today at the weekend against Brighton. I don't think those two are accidents. I think, you know, he's a man who sort of is very, very pragmatic about the approaches that he makes to these games. And I think he maybe was saving this game for the big Bissouma moment. And I'm glad it delivered in, you know, it's not the sort of bells and whistle performance that we were maybe expecting from Bissouma, but it was fine. It was a good performance. It was much better than his performance against West Ham, for example. And at the moment, I think it's going to be a huge for his confidence, because after the game, he was the last person to leave the pitch. Last player to leave the pitch, and he was stood on his own with the Spurs fans for a good few minutes at the end, and everyone was singing his chant. So I think in terms of confidence, it's going to be massive for him going forward. And I think after that West Ham game, where he had a pretty poor game overall, he maybe needed something like this. And again, I think that's all by design from Conte. He's kind of putting him in a huge game for him personally, with the hope that it will sort of spur him. And I think this could be the start of us. And I just think with that three, it's a really, really good balanced midfield, because I don't know if it was the fact that Bissouma was there as well, but I thought that was probably Bentancur and Højbjerg's best game for us, maybe all season. They've both been very good for the large parts of the season in general anyway. But I think this was like another level from them. I thought they were absolutely outstanding again. And I think as a three, that's such a great midfield, because it's very, very hard to break down. And I think, as Tom was saying, like, that is not an easy place to go and win at all. That's a huge, huge win. It's the first time they've lost at home since March, and that was also against us. I don't think many teams are going to go there this year and win there. I really don't. You know, last week they outplayed Liverpool. They were unlucky not to win it. I think it's a huge win. And I think with the circumstances surrounding the game, we maybe not appreciate how big that win actually is. Yeah, absolutely delighted with that win. It's huge.
It's also just that formation also allowed us to have options on the bench as well. Obviously, with if Kulu out, when we've been playing all three forwards, the last few games we've had nothing on the bench at all, with Lucas also injured. To be able to bring on Perisic, who... Yeah, I don't think he did a huge amount, but he just works so hard every time, like for every minute that he's on the pitch. To kind of have and be able to bring on Richarlison, obviously, who again didn't do tons, but you know, to have fresh legs at that point in the game was so important. So the other recent games I've been looking at the bench thinking there's nothing on there. So it worked well in that regard.
And do we feel like that? Because obviously that was a sunny assist for Kane's goal, right? So do we feel like that kind of partnership might be allowed to kind of thrive a bit more again? Because when we talked about it last week, I think my fear was that we would kind of see the complaints that it was very stodgy and actually not kind of attacky enough. But we just like again got another Son and Kane combination, so actually maybe it's just nothing to worry about, and like that's all fine.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with the formation, because maybe I think when we've seen Son in a 3-4-3, when Kulusevski's not been there, he's looked really poor. So maybe having him in the strike, he did look better against Brighton. He's still not quite at his very best, but he also scored. It was ruled out for offside, but it was an amazing goal that he scored, and he got an assist. So certainly positive signs. I think under Conte, unless we're playing with Kulusevski, Kane and Son, which we know works really well as a front three, I think he's much better in the two with Kane, where he's right up by Kane. There's something about the balance between Kane, Richarlison and Son that just doesn't work. And I think maybe this is, if it's not, I'm not exactly predicting that we're going to see 3-5-2 in every single game going forward, but at least I think this has proved that there's now an option, that if it's not working, we can switch to it. I think Conte will be more open to it now, because it's like an experiment that's worked and got a win at a very difficult place to win. So I think this might be the start of seeing it more often. But having said that, I do, it wouldn't surprise me if we went 3-4-3 against Frankfurt on Wednesday.
I'm also intrigued to see either Kulu or Richarlison in a two as well. We've got so many games coming up and it's hard to rest either Son or Kane, but Richarlison and Kulu both in theory should be able to play in a two as well, right?
Yeah, and there was that sort of awful moment again where Kane went down and we all just thought, oh, fucking hell, his ankle's gone again. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to get sort of everybody else up and running again. It's so interesting, though, about when Conte decides to start, because you're right, but like I hadn't remembered that about Spence starting against Forest. And it's almost like he does have this whole thing about character, and it's almost got to be like a baptism of fire. Like when you're ready, you're ready. You're going like all the way into the kind of bear pit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that, that is just Conte all over, isn't it? He's all about that kind of thing, the passion and the suffering and all that stuff. And I think it just fits that. But I do think with the formation changes, I'm trying to rack my brains. I can't remember a game where Kane has not started for us in a while. I'm sure there might be, because I think I read that only Dyer is maybe, there's only a few players that have played every single Premier League game for us and every single European game. I know, like, I think Højbjerg and Dyer might be up there. Probably wrong somewhere, but I can't remember a game where Kane's been benched. So maybe we're going to have to see that soon, because he can't keep playing every game up until the World Cup. So I wonder if we might see, as Tom was saying, maybe some like Richarlison and Son, or, Son and Kulusevski, or Richarlison and Kulusevski, something like that, something different anyway, because we can't just play Kane all of these games, right?
I mean, you say that, but I don't know, to be honest.
Everyone else has been benched, right? I can't think of a game where Kane's been benched. Kulusevski, Son, Richarlison have all been on the bench, but Kane, I can't remember a time when he's been benched.
When is the Carabao Cup game must be coming up fairly soon? Is it Forest?
I think it's like I think it's the last game before the World Cup, 11th of November or something like that.
Okay.
Something like that.
Well, it is mad. Looking at the fixture list now, is actually we haven't got long till the Premier League's over and this weird break happens. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think
England fans will hate us, Southgate will hate us, but maybe we just run Kane into the ground and like forget about England. Who cares?
Yeah, I think there's I think this is right. So I looked at it today. I think there's 6 Premier League games left and 4 of them are at home. So it's a good little stretch. Hopefully, if we can sort of maintain this kind of form until the World Cup, we'll be in a good position, I think. But you've got to see Kane bench at some point, surely. Like, maybe it is just going to be that Carabao Cup game that does it, and maybe he's just sort of hoping that we go like 2-0 up so we can just on like 60 minutes or something.
I mean, that was a tough week, man. That was like 3 away games in a row, and to kind of come out of it, especially the way that week started, we don't need to look back at that at all, but actually like the draw away and then the win. That win against Brighton was really, really massive, actually. Should we have like a quick chat about the wing backs? Because obviously Doherty is now alive, maybe not kind of flourishing as he once did. But I do feel like we've got to talk a little bit about Cesc, because he got man of the match. And I feel just really, really pleased for him. I feel like it was a pretty solid performance, actually, because he's kind of, you know, I'm a big cheerleader for Cesc. And all I want is to be able to kind of robustly defend him against the haters, naming no names, Oliver, my partner. And I feel like he gave me ammunition on Saturday. So thank you for that, Ryan.
Yeah, man, I thought he was great. I think he was especially good defensively, which you don't often say about him. He's more of a sort of like, he's a very pacey sort of fullback who goes forward a lot. And, you know, when he was at Fulham, he was known as a goal scorer more than anything. But I think we saw a real maturity to his defensive play at the weekend. I think it's been a little bit difficult for him as well, because Conte will say that he doesn't really have first choice, it's all about the squad. But Perisic has sort of taken that place at the moment, hasn't he? He started the last few games. And if he had to bank on it, you would say Perisic would be the one that would be starting. But I thought it was a really, really good performance. And this is the kind of thing which when you talk about having a big squad and having players that can come in, that's what you look for. So Perisic is starting a few games. We're going to rest him. And the deputy that comes in and gets man of the match. So now who does Conte pick? So when you look at all these big clubs like Man City and Chelsea, historically, this is what it means when you have a big club. You get the actual competition for places and not just a really good player and someone who's not as good. So I think when we talk about having a big club and that depth, this is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, and it's good to see that we finally had, like, you know, even if Doherty's not back at the level that he was before he got injured, it's so, so, so good to see him just actually back out there and kind of completing 90 minutes. I mean, did he make 90 minutes? I can't really remember. Did he get subbed off at some point? I feel like there were loads of subs at one point and I sort of lost what formation we were meant to be playing. But he played most of the match, right? So that's just such a boost. Is it time for our like half hour hometown glory Harry Kane like klaxon? Because he got the only goal of the game, and now he's got like he's got 9 goals in 8 games or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's, and he scored in 4 Premier League goals in a row as well. 4 Premier League games in a row, which is his best ever run, I think. So yeah, I mean, just like if Haaland wasn't scoring like he is, then this would go down as being like an incredible scoring run. But because of Haaland, like 8 goals in 9 Premier League games doesn't sound that good, which is mental because it's amazing. And it's Harry Kane, who traditionally doesn't even start scoring until like September in the first place. So yeah, it's been an unbelievable start. I think this is like best ever Premier League start. So if that's what he's going to do, you know, now, imagine how many goals he's going to have by the end of the season. And he's only now 10 behind Jimmy Greaves, which is insane. That's Did you ever crazy. Think anyone would actually catch Jimmy Greaves?
10, Jesus.
And then 11 to be the top scorer. So he's almost definitely going to do it this year, which is crazy.
A bunch of those are headers as well, right, for this season. Was it like, is it 5 or 6 of them have been headers, which obviously says something about our set-piece coach, because we've had a few from corners, haven't we? And, you know, I think that's part of his game that's underrated, is he's just fucking so good in the air as well. And also so good at reading children's bedtime stories. I was chatting on Monday, as he launched his foundation. It's World Mental Health Day, I believe. And he also read the bedtime story for CBeebies. If you haven't watched it, go and watch it. It's very sweet. He said on Twitter, I think, that he was very nervous. It was way more nerve-wracking than doing interviews. And you can kind of tell that. But he read The Line Inside, which is one of my favourite kids' books that I read to my kids, by, I think, Rachel Bright. Her books are great. And then he launched this foundation, right? There was an amazing animation that he released to kind of announce the Harry Kane Foundation. And I believe it's going to sort of work with mental health in kind of young kids and helping them be resilient against kind of setbacks and stuff, right?
Yeah, man, it's such a lovely cause that that video that he released today promoting launching his foundation, like that really got me, because it was like the story of his career, right, from being released by Arsenal to becoming like England's captain. And it actually made me think back to last week, but when you were talking about when I was talking about like Poch's first season, how that's like my favorite season of football. And you were saying, and that's also the season that Harry Kane emerged, and we'll never get to see anything like that again, probably at least for a very, very long time. And that's been such a gift to us as Spurs fans. And it was so lovely kind of watching that story in animation and just kind of remembering everything that he's been through and everything that we've been through with him. And it looks like, I think the sort of mission statement is like changing the conversation around mental health, or changing it for a generation, which is pretty ambitious and really very, very cool, I think. And I love the fact that we were all sat down at like 10 to 7 this evening, all watching Kane read his CBeebies bedtime story. And like, it really got me, man. I was like, oh, it was so sweet. You could see him kind of holding himself very kind of steadily and really like concentrating hard, but like a massive thing. If you remember like how much people just took the fucking piss out of him when he started, in a way that like, it's so offensive actually, really, how people talked about him then, how quite a lot of people still talk about him now. And it's one of those things where we really, like, as Tottenham fans, we're so protective of him, but it's like, he's like the most kind of weirdly, randomly, unnecessarily hated players. And it's like, what is there to hate, man? He's like the most inoffensive, sweet dude, and now here he is launching his mental health foundation and reading a children's book. Like, what is wrong with everybody else?
Also, all those people love him when he plays for England as well at a tournament. Like, suddenly everyone loves him. And it's, yeah, you're right. It's like, some of the things that have said about him are incredibly offensive, really. Just awful.
And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, you know, you see someone have an academy player who comes through, bursts onto this. It's like, you know, the kind of cliche of the Rovers thing. He bursts through to the scene. He becomes the best striker in the Premier League, if not the best striker in the world. Can he keep it up? Yeah, he keeps it up for like 10 years or whatever. He's been doing it for now. And I think a lot of the sort of hatred comes to the fact that it didn't happen to them, it happened to us. Supporting Harry Kane has been by far, like, I know, it's, you know, you can say this is a tin pot thing, but it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me and my Tottenham support in life, like, because we haven't won trophies, but what we have been able to do is support like a man who's like a thoroughly good man. And I think at a time, as we spoke about a lot last week, when football can often sort of, you know, football and the behavior of footballers can either cause you to either choose between standing by your morals or standing by your football team, with Harry Kane, we never have to make that choice. He's never had a single scandal. I don't think I can safely say he will never cause us to have to make that choice or something like that. It's just not him. It's not his character. And in fact, he's totally the opposite. Like, I'm being a primary school teacher at the moment. You know, I see every day how much important those conversations around mental health are with the children. You have to remember that somebody in, like, for example, somebody starting primary school now, a child in reception, would have spent half their life indoors. These kids would have spent 2 years of their school life at home. It's a really, really important cause that he is he's just released some primary school resources as well, which I'm going to use in my class, which I can't wait to use. And this is a man that still attracts hate from a lot of people. I just find it absolutely absurd. He's never put a foot wrong in his career, like morally. He's never had a scandal. You can safely guarantee that will almost certainly never, ever happen with him. It's baffling to me that this man isn't lauded as like an absolute national hero, as he should be. But he certainly won't get that with Spurs fans, and supporting him just makes me so proud to be Tottenham. And in days where he's gone on to be like an incredible scorer, he's gave a really emotional interview in support of someone that he lost. And then he's done all this today. It's just like, how you just can't describe how good this man is and how much it means to Tottenham fans. He's just perfect. He's absolutely perfect. And I think a lot of the hate comes from the fact that something perfect happened to Tottenham fans and it didn't happen to them. What an amazing man.
Billy, I think my heart grew 3 sizes listening to you there.
There's also, related to that, it's just like, what do we want from our footballers then? Because footballers get stick constantly for being flash and driving sports cars and, getting in trouble. And people seem to hate him because he's boring and he's like still with the girl from school that he grew up with. He's not ostentatious. He's just kind of plays golf and gets on with the job. And it's like reliable and nice. And I find it bizarre that people hate on him.
And has scored some of the most perfect goals we've ever seen. And I guess we'll get to sort of goals a little bit later, should we? But before we do that, shall we move on to just thinking about the next 2 games? So Wednesday, we've got Frankfurt at home. How are we all feeling about it? Are you guys going to be there?
I am going to be there. I am away for Everton and Newcastle. So I'm excited to get to the lane on a sort of autumnal Wednesday. I'm kind of heartened from the away leg because they weren't that good, were they, Frankfurt, really? We just couldn't fucking score. So I'm hoping at home that will click. And then I'm mostly just worried about their fans because they're pretty rowdy. We discussed, I think, on the last podcast how they just get loads of their own fans in the home end every game. And also they're bound to get a drum in, which will annoy the hell out of me.
Yeah, I don't know how much to be worried about it. Do you know what I mean? Like in one way, I'm like, okay, it's at home. This is good. Like, I feel like we've done the sort of really difficult bit now. We've had kind of 2 tough away games and now we can have 2 home games, like our next Champions League games are home as well, isn't it? And I sort of feel like maybe we are starting to kind of click into gear. It feels like we really went for it away, right? It wasn't a kind of the sort of performance we've been associating with Conte. It was very much like, actually, let's go and try. Like, he obviously coached us to try to get the win. It wasn't about kind of sitting back at all. So I feel like if we can replicate that, and everything does start clicking, we should be okay. It's just, they're a mad team, aren't they? Like, who they can like beat like the leaders and then like lose to the bottom team. So is it just a question of like which Frankfurt is going to turn up?
Yeah, I think they lost to Bochum at the weekend to a bottom of Bundesliga. They lost 3-0 away as well. I don't know if they were resting players or whatever in preparation for this game, but they're also like mid-table Bundesliga. Like, they're not, I know they lost some of their best players. Like, they lost Kostic, who we were linked with at the time, was a brilliant left back. I think they lost into Juventus. So like, it's not something we should be fearing, really. I do think we have to win this game, really, if we want to sort of assert ourselves in this group now, because it's now we've got 2 home games back to back. To be honest, I think we'll win it. Because we were by far the better team last week. It's just one of those games where our finishing was not up to scratch. And I'll just take like an early Tottenham goal for us to be really firing, I think. And I think we could potentially blow them away, which hopefully we will do.
Who do we think is going to start? Any ideas? Do we think it'll be back to 3-4-3? I guess Perisic will start, right?
And obviously Emerson, I think, will start again as well, because he's out for the next two Premier League games. I think he'll start. I think he'll play pretty much the same team that he played again in the last game against them, to be honest. Identical team. And yeah, it'd be nice to have another Richarlison goal, wouldn't it? Because it's been a while. It's been since the Marseille game where he scored. He hasn't scored for a while. He's been plenty of like busyness, plenty of, you know, he has been making an impact on games. He's won the penalty against Arsenal, etc. But it'd be nice for a Richarlison goal. So I'd hope to see him start as well.
And then do we maybe, as we probably won't go back to 3-5-2 for a home game against Everton, you'd think, right? I was a bit annoyed with them yesterday because obviously like bad stuff happened in the football yesterday. And I thought we were going to get really cheered up by an unexpected Everton win, but then that didn't happen. So I guess they're still pretty ropey.
Well, annoyingly, Ronaldo came on, didn't he, and scored, and we've got United pretty soon. So I'm sure he will be revitalised and back in the fold. The good news from Everton is Anthony Gordon is suspended, who has really impressed me. I know we were linked with him as for Chelsea for a hell of a lot of money, but he has been pretty impressive for Everton. So it's good news that he's out. He's out for them. And Kulu, fingers crossed, he might at least make the bench for that one.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like the last time we played them, they were absolutely awful. They're an awful side last season. And as surprised as I am to say this, like Frank Lampard has, I think he's starting to sort of get something out of them. I think they've gone the last six games unbeaten before Man United. And they weirdly, which is a crazy thing to say, they had like the best defensive league in the defensive record in the Premier League up until this weekend, which is crazy for you never ever associate that with Everton. So I don't think it's going to be like the easy game that it was this time last year. But again, you know, we should be beating them at home. And, you know, talking of what we were talking about earlier, it's another game where we've got someone returning to the club that they used to play for. So I'm sure Richarlison will have a big impact in that game as well. And Conte will probably start him in that one. So who knows, he might drop Richarlison on Wednesday and then play him on Saturday or something like that. You can't really predict what Conte is going to do game to game at the moment. Now that he sort of, I don't really understand the patterns in his rotation. So who knows? But again, it's a game that I think we'll win again.
But I also kind of like that. Do you know what I mean? If it's a bit like we can't predict it and we pay quite a lot of attention, then that's quite good news for us kind of versus other teams, I guess, because it sort of leaves them guessing, you would hope.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the quotes from the Brighton manager. He obviously came up against Conte a lot last in Serie A. And he said, because we were all over Brighton in the first 25 minutes, and he actually came out and said the reason for that is he totally got it wrong and he thought we were going to play 3-4-3. And his whole game plan was to nullify 3-4-3. And when we didn't play that, it didn't work at all. So he basically put his hand up and said, I got it wrong. So maybe now this is going to encourage Conte to start, you know, playing about the formation a bit more, because we've been very, very solid in our 3-4-3. I mean, solid in terms of keeping it the same. So maybe this sort of mystifying nature of Conte's selection might be quite good, because it definitely worked at the weekend, because the Brighton manager said it.
Yeah, and I'm also, like, I think as well, obviously, Gentle Ben came back at the weekend, so I think I'll probably get some long lay again in the week and then back to GB at the weekend. So, you know, that part of it is working really, really well for me. Do we feel like we want to do any predictions? I feel a bit like I don't like doing them, so I'm very happy to just say, let's not bother and just...
I hate doing them. And
skip ahead.
Every week when Charlie asks for them, I want to just say, no, I'm not doing
it. Yeah.
This week, okay. No, Charlie, sorry.
Okay, no, yeah, I'm going to let you off your homework this week. That's I am the chilled out substitute teacher, yes. Shall we move on in that case to our amazing, amazing listeners to rolling in the tweets? Honestly, you guys, your memories are all insane. So Billy put out a tweet earlier today about there's a video doing the rounds suggesting that Delhi's goal against United is one of the most underrated Prem goals. That video in itself is really hilarious, so watch it. So this week we wanted to know, what is the most underrated Spurs goal ever? You got, like, how many responses did we get, Bill?
There's like literally hundreds. I physically can't keep up with them all. So thank you very, very much for those. And I think keeping in spirit of the question, like, some of them are so niche, which is like why we love you guys in the first place. So thank you for those. So I've selected some of them. I could not get through all of them if I tried, because we'd be here, you know, until that Frankfurt game, I think. But I do have some. So here we go. So one of the ones that came up a lot and was, even though everyone knows it, it's Lucas's second goal against Ajax, not spoken about enough. And loads of people were in agreement of that one. And in that thread, actually, someone managed to find a tweet from Hugh Laurie bigging up that goal. So there you go. I'd never seen that before. Tom says the Jamie Redknapp versus them in 2004, 45 seconds in here. My favorite thing about these is I don't know a lot of these goals. I don't remember them. And I guess that is a testament to how underrated that they are. Friend of the show, AP says Dele's goal against Arsenal in the Cup, which I remember we did a special about Dele Alli last year when he left. And I said that goal was really, really underrated. That's one of my favorite all-time Spurs goals. Lots of shouts for Eric Edmond. Kevin says him, that classic goal against Liverpool, which I think is very highly rated by Spurs fans, but maybe in like the wider football community, it's not really spoken about enough considering how crazily far distance it is. Anthony Yearwood says, for me, the Dele goal in the North London Derby, December 2018, or the Harry Kane with the ball over the top. Great, but the chip finish, what a player. We've got a couple of shouts for Kane's goal against Crystal Palace as well. One of his best ever goals, I think. That was an absolutely superb goal. But it's one of those weird goals where you sort of see it and then it's in like lockdown. There's no fan zone. It's a real shame. Jimmy says Dele's versus Chelsea at the Bridge when he controlled Dyer's long pass was a touch of pure class. Celebration was great too. Turner says, honestly, Gareth Bale's volley versus Stoke, which is another goal that comes up quite a lot. James says, Harry Kane away at Leicester when he's basically fallen on his face and somehow chips into the top left corner. Insane. I think it was one of Poch's last games when he got robbed by VAR. Yeah, I remember it well. That's where the downfall started for me when we got that VAR decision. Gavin also says, Eric Edmond versus Liverpool. Zane Leon, this is my favourite type of answer because I have no memory whatsoever of this goal, but, you know, I truly believe you. So he says, no one ever mentions it, literally, but Canute against Everton back in 2003, what a hit. And that's the kind of memory that we love on this show. I'm sure it was a brilliant goal. SW Spurs says, there's a goal that Lineker scored against Porto at home. It's the ultimate team goal. Trunk, our good friend Trunk, says Kane against Chelsea home in 2015 to make it 1-1 was actually fucking ridiculous. It was also the game that the penny dropped on him actually being a player as opposed to just an academy kid on a hot streak. You know, we've spoken enough about that today. Exactly summarizes our feelings of that man. Dan Thomas says, similarly overlooked was Dele's goal in the Chelsea semi-final. It gets enough love. Ericsson with one of the best assists you'll see. An absolute peak Dele finish, yeah. I honestly think that's the best ever assist I've seen live in the flesh. A couple of shouts, like Conte Stallion says, for Ndombele's goal against Sheffield United. That comes up a few times. Nick says, a Son header against Huddersfield at Wembley a few years back. The ball from Kane, different level, and Sonny just guides it in beautifully. I remember being there for that goal as well. Graham says the Chris Armstrong diving header away to Palace. Tweet Good Max says both Gian and Bale's goals against Swansea. Tim Sock Formation says Defoe against Middlesbrough in 04. A couple ones that Rosa will like in a second. Here's one that says Louis says Dembele versus Lyon. Maybe more forgotten than underrated, but a goal in the last minute. Jonathan says Christian Ziger in a 2-1 away loss to Blackburn. Couple of shouts for this goal as well. Benny says Huddleston at City on the half volley with the ball on the way up and not on the way down, and Keane away to Villa. Where's Johnson? A bit niche. These are ones we like. Where? So he says a bit niche, but Anderson away at QPR in a 1-1 draw, mid-90s. The yellow Klinsmann kit, Barmy back heel, Mickey has a pass, proper Spurs goal. That's the stuff we like, the niche stuff, which no one else remembers, but we do on this podcast. The head says Pavlyuchenko goal against Young Boys. Spurs view says Pavlyuchenko goal against Bolton. A couple more shouts for Bale's volley. Another goal that comes up quite a lot is a Berbatov one versus Charlton. Some more shouts for Huddersfield versus City. Josh says Crankyard versus Stoke, a dummy and strike. Max also says Berbatov versus Charlton. Another goal, which I have completely forgotten. In fact, I didn't even remember this player even ever scored for us in his whole career. But Luke says Alan Hutton wrapping the ball in the top corner from the edge of the box on his weak foot. Dear friend of the show and dear family member, Oliver says Chaddy versus Palace in the game. Dele scored that goal. Huddleston versus City again, and Defoe's goal in the 4-5 loss to that lot. Bearded Caviar says Harry Kane at Anfield. Another great goal, which I remember, which was a hard angle back to goal. Didn't matter. Tom, our dear friend Tom, says Kirikesh versus Fulham. A couple more shouts for Pavlyuchenko. Box Fresh says Adebayo versus Chelsea. Rico says Peter Crouch away to Werder Bremen. There are literally hundreds of goals. Just want to shout out a couple more regular ones that came up as well as the Pedro Mendes one versus Man United that was ridiculously ruled out. Another one close to Rose's heart. Liam says Ryan Mason versus Sunderland. That's got to be up there. And yeah. So thank you so much for those. Honestly, I could read them out. It would take me hours to read all of them. And we, as always, we really, really appreciate you guys getting in touch, because you do make this show what it is. So thank you for that.
So many insane answers in there. I'm so pleased someone mentioned that Ryan Mason one, because I remember that goal really well. And it obviously like broke him. Like he got injured like as he was scoring that, and then was like just out of action forever. But it also really kickstarted our season, that win. So that to me is like a perfect underrated goal. Who are you crazy people who are remembering goals scored by Alan Hutton and like Kirikesh? Like I know there's like a group of you out there who love Kirikesh and who feel like he's like your cult hero. I'm hit like honest to God, no. He was terrible. I was never happier than when he left, and I genuinely can't believe he ever scored a goal for us.
So just terrible. And like, I'm just amazed people have that good memories, because my memory is fucking awful. Clearly, I don't know, people aren't drinking as much as me, or just you doing some sort of memory exercise games, because my memory is so bad. The Kane at Leicester where he fell over, that was incredible, where he's like somehow scores while he's falling down over. And I just want to shout out Jermaine Defoe, because he just did things so simply yet beautifully. And I think he's sort of the magic of JD is kind of forgotten sometimes. So
yeah, man, it's so nice to have him back at the club as well, isn't it? I feel so pleased that he's kind of back home. That was so nice. You're all mad. I can't believe the things that you all remember. But thank you all. Shall we move on to, you know, the most important part of the pod? Culture. Billy, do you want to go first before Tom and I take it just completely off the rails with our Strictly chat?
Yeah, man. I still have not watched Strictly. I've never seen a single episode in my life, actually. It's just one thing. It's not that I have anything particularly against it. I've just literally never seen it. Never been into it. But I have watched two new shows this week. And one of them, I think I've spoken both about them on the podcast before, because one of them Charlie mentioned last week. I watched the first episode of The Bear on Disney Plus, which was amazing. And I'm going to probably watch some of that tonight as soon as we've done doing this. But the first episode is brilliant. You know, when you watch a show sometimes and after like 10 minutes, you're like, oh, I know all the characters already. Like, you just know exactly. It's like a testament to how good the writing is that you just know exactly everything about them that you need to know straight away. And it was that kind of show that just like settled into its rhythm straight away. It's very, very stressful, as you would imagine. Any kind of drama is that's set in a kitchen. It's about a chef that moves to a different restaurant in New York after his brother died. But it seems really, really good. And the other thing I've been starting is The Rehearsal, which I can't really describe in words. It's a crazy, crazy concept of a show, but it's basically, it's kind of half reality, half comedy. It's by Nathan Fielder, who has a lot of a lot of plaudits for his Nathan For You show, which again is this weird kind of mix of reality and real life situations mixed with like scripted comedy. You can't really describe it without, you have to see it to be able to believe it. But this show is about, he takes real people that are in like weird situations in their life where they need support of something, and he makes them rehearse them. And when I say rehearse them, I mean he literally, so this guy in the first episode, I won't spoil anything that happens, but this guy has to confess something to his friend that he's been lying to her. So what he does, he builds a replica of this guy's house and builds a replica of the bar which him and his friend always go to, like, and I'm like a literal perfect replica. And he rehearses the conversation like hundreds of times with every possible outcome, and it is the weirdest show I've ever seen, but it's unbelievably compelling viewing. So shout out The Rehearsal as well. And I've been listening at the moment to the new Daphne album. I need to listen to it a bit more before I properly get into it, but yeah, really enjoying that from what I've heard so far. And he's a great man, so shout out to Daphne, aka Caribou. But yeah, that sounds like a really good album. I've only listened to a few tracks so far, but I'm definitely going to be putting that on this week.
I feel like The Rehearsal is the kind of show that like I should watch, but I would also end up just being like, I'm just going to claw my own face off to get away from it because it's just too stressful. Like reality TV, things like Strictly aside, which are just kind of cuddly, I can't really deal with the secondhand embarrassment at all. And anything that, you know, shows like Curb, which I know are like genius works of art, I can't watch them. I can't do it. It's just too stressful. And it seems like that's a kind of merging of those genres in a way that'll just make me just want to die.
And it is a difficult watch for that reason. But the good thing that it does in the first episode is it chooses a guy who is insanely likable. Like, you get to like fall in love with this guy straight away. And you're really, really rooting for him. And by the time the actual real life conversation comes along, your heart's like beating, like thinking you really want this guy to do well. I'm not obviously won't reveal what actually happens when he actually tells this woman the lie, but oh my God, like they couldn't have chosen a better guy for the first episode, because you just like totally warm to him and you just want him to succeed. So yeah, well, honestly, I've never seen anything like it before. I doubt anything has ever been on TV, anything like it. It's some weird mix of reality and real and scripted. You're kind of half guessing.
Is
the whole thing
is on, Bill?
It's a HBO show, so it's on Sky. HBO in America, Sky in England. And honestly, you have to watch it. You have to watch the first episode, just because you have never ever seen anything like it in your life. Honestly, go for it.
On a related note, I watched a few of How To with John Wilson, which Nathan Fielder produced, I think, and that is pretty weird but kind of satisfying. But you've kind of, again, you've got to concentrate. It's not kind of casual viewing, because it's quite weird. And I think you only really, it's kind of hypnotic and funny, but you do have to concentrate. But they're on iPlayer as well.
Yeah, that's a good thing about the rehearsal, is it's kind of like, it's basically reality TV. So you don't, it's not one of those shows where you have to literally like give your full attention to, like some of the shows that, you know, I've been watching, the heavy dramas that you're watching too. It's kind of like shot like a reality show. So you can kind of just like half watch it, which is always good in an.
Need to watch that. But talking of shows that you need to give your whole attention to, come on, Strictly, Rosa, who's your favourite?
To be honest, Matt, like, do you remember whenever it was, like, last year when Spielberg's version of West Side Story came out, and I was like, I found my favourite film of all time. I'm just going to watch it every day for the rest of my life.
So in on that, yeah.
Yeah, like, remains true. So when Molly and Carlos came out dancing to One Hand, One Heart from that musical, I was just like, yeah, man, you've made a very obvious play for my vote. And I'm here to tell you that it absolutely worked. Like, it doesn't hurt. Like, she's obviously really brilliant, isn't she? Like, it feels like cheating a little bit, because she's obviously very naturally talented. But they're a good team, man. It's nice.
He's very likable, Carlos, and he clearly works her very hard. But also there is always someone who's like 18, essentially.
Yeah.
Of course a fucking 18-year-old's going to be really good. They're not they'd be able to walk today after doing a half marathon. I cannot.
Exactly. But who did do the marathon? It was...
The guy...
Oh, my God, what's his face?
Presenter, right?
He literally ran the marathon and then got, like, the first tens of the season for his Charleston.
He's slightly Tyler. Over... Tyler.
Yeah.
He's
slightly
Diane,
overmarked, though.
You know, obviously with Oti gone, I need a new favourite female dancer. And I think Diane, like, she is really hot and just a great dancer as well.
She's very cool. But for me, it's Karen. She's a freaking goddess, man. And again, like, I enjoyed their dance this week with Jade, the flash dance, the cha-cha-cha, was it? The flash dance.
She's
very,
clearly
very
doing
cool.
She's clearly doing a very good job with Jade. Slightly sad that, I mean, on paper, Johannes and Ellie Jane Taylor from Ted Lasso were going to be my favourite couple, but she's been a little bit disappointing, I think.
I think she's really nervous. I feel very warm towards her, because I feel like that's how I would be. I'd want to do it so well, and then I'd just be really stiff and awkward, and it would be really heartbreaking. So I feel, but then I'm also a bit like, come on, Johannes is obviously the best male dancer.
Come on, Johannes is the greatest.
Yeah. So... yeah, I want her. I think she's quite lucky to still be in it, to be honest, because she could have easily had that sort of horrible lost in the middle, but without any. But then maybe the Johannes vote is keeping her in. I don't know.
Her and Fleur were both pretty boring this week.
And I like CBeebies other dude, Ranger Hamza, not have the best week.
Also, I love his partner. I think her name's Javita. But considering his body shape, shall we say, like, he's surprisingly nimble, I think, Hamza.
But what's that, what's the Jurassic Park got to do with what are they doing, like a rumba?
I mean,
I don't know, why am I looking for logic in Strictly? It makes no sense.
Some of the movie themed ones were pretty ridiculous, weren't they? And poor Richie, who the guy, you know, I guess I'm surprised he went because he was good the other weeks. But yeah, the Lion King, Timon and Pumbaa thing was fairly terrible.
It was brutal. I was just like, I don't know why you put them in costumes where you just can't see that they're like the dance at all. It feels like you were right. I feel like they got stitched up, like quite literally.
Gio is obviously a genius, as we saw last year with Rose. So I feel a bit sorry for Gio. But then again, I also admit I had to like really Google who that Guy Ritchie is. So I it is a kind of popularity contest, isn't it? So he's sadly, Tony Adams probably has more fans.
I mean, he just, let's just skip right on past him. The thing that I love about Strictly is when you get to a certain stage of your like relationship with that show where you know all the dancers really well and you don't really know that many of the celebrities and that's all that matters, really.
Totally know the dancers better than the celebrities, for sure. The dancers are the real stars, come on.
What's your favourite dance, Tom?
I quite like a fun Charleston. A rumba is always fun. I like the Latin.
Sexy rumba, yeah.
The Latin ones are a Charleston, I think. Like, but then again, when someone nails a ballroom, like, you know, Rose last year, obviously. When usually a female, like, celeb nails the ballroom, romantic ballroom one, it's pretty breathtaking.
I love a paso doble.
Because
I'm a big fan of the original Strictly Ballroom movie, and obviously that was like the dance that they had to learn. I like an American smooth. I like a quick step. That's always good. So just whoever manages those really well, they'll probably get my vote. Or like whatever tango. I don't really know the differences between the tangos or the waltzes, to be honest.
I'm useless with kind of knowing exactly what dance they're doing. And also often, I think everyone does this with Strictly, but often I'm like, that was fucking amazing. That was so good. And then the judges all go, two, that was terrible, and just rip it apart. And sometimes the opposite is true, where I'm like, that was really underwhelming, and the judges give everyone a 9.
Yeah. Would you, one last question, and then we'll do like a bit more proper culture. Would you, if you were going into Strictly, I think about this way too much, would you rather be someone who was like naturally like, who like picked up the technical stuff straight away? Or would you rather have more like, you know, charisma and personality and then do the technical stuff a bit later?
I like the celebs who go on a journey. You know, that's what it's all about, isn't it? So sometimes there is a dark horse who's kind of a bit shit for like 4 or 5 weeks and suddenly cracks it. But I think generally the professionals are just like clearly amazingly patient, amazing teachers. And some of them are obviously amazing choreographers as well. So, I mean, like, Johannes is so good, isn't he?
He's just unbelievably good. I love him so much.
Said, Karen clearly as well. And they don't.
Yeah, and neither of them have won it, right? So I think.
Yeah. I felt bad for Kai because he's already gone, obviously. Mm. But he had a very good year with AJ and then she got injured last time. But I am missing. I am obviously. We're all missing Aliash, obviously, as well as O2.
Oh my God, those two, man, it's rough without them, isn't it? It's really rough. Yeah.
Heartbreaking. Well, tell us your real. I haven't got any real culture. I've only done Strictly and football, and that's about it.
Yeah. So I've done Strictly. I've got another episode. I watched another episode of Andor, which is just kind of. Actually, Ollie and I had a conversation, Bill, I don't know how you feel about this, where he thinks he might actually prefer it to The Mandalorian, which I consider to be sacrilege. But it's been really good at like expanding the world, right?
Yeah, it's definitely much better than Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. Maybe it has to do it for 2 seasons like the Mandalorian did for it to be properly compared yet. But it's definitely promising. Definitely for sure. It's definitely well up there. Definitely well up there. It's really good.
Yeah, and they've actually made me kind of give a shit about the sort of political intrigue stuff this time round, which, you know, you don't really...
And there's been not a single mention of Jedis or the Force or anything, and it's just, like, so good.
Yeah.
It's actually just something totally different to all that, the whole, Skywalker saga, which, you know, we've probably got a bit of fatigue of now after all the films that we've had and various TV shows. So, yeah, it's nice, a nice refreshment.
Yeah, and it's just really, really well done, isn't it? One other thing about it is that the guy we were talking about last week, whose name I always forget, who is Desi in Girls and is also in The Bear, but is also in Andor as part of that like rebel crew. So he's having a pretty good time of it. I've just got one last little culture thing, which is that I finished a book last week by a writer called Sloane Crossley, which, if there's a more American name, I don't think I've heard it. Many years ago now, I think she wrote some quite sort of funny, like non-fiction essays in a kind of, like maybe sort of David Sedaris kind of vein, which I really enjoyed. And this is a novel of hers called Cult Classic, which kind of starts out as a sort of romance. So she's kind of dealing with like her like upcoming wedding, and then a bunch of her exes start randomly dropping into her life, and then it kind of expands into this mystery. And it's sort of like, I hesitate to call it like a twist at the end, because I think anyone who is not me would have seen it coming a mile off, but because I'm really terrible at that kind of thing and I just don't tend to spot them, I was actually quite surprised by how it ended. So it was pretty good, like quite a sort of light, easy read, pretty fun. And I just basically made sure I finished it so that I would have something else to talk about that was not like dancing or dragons this week. But yeah, that's it from me. Thanks, guys. This has been super fun. Sort of a real emotional journey as well, which kind of befits the couple of weeks that we've all had as Spurs fans. Billy, will you see us home?
Strength and honour and up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.